We're going to cut in right there to Hank Williams Jr. And as promised, we have on the line right now Representative Bryce Edgman. He's a representative for District 37, including the Aleutians East Borough. He's been in Juneau representing for 12 years now, I believe. Representative Edgman, thank you so much for joining us today.
Good morning, Austin. Nice to be on the air with you.
It's always a pleasure to have you as well. So we are once again upon us the election season. And we are thankful that you're on the air right now, and we wanted to talk about just some of the things that you've been doing lately. It's been quite a time to be a leader in Alaska, as we don't need to remind you, but I wanted to give you a chance to share, you know, your message and your thoughts with the people here in the Aleutians East Borough as we come closer to November. And I guess just to lead it off, the first thing I'd like to ask is, you know, why do you feel people here in the Bush communities should go to the polls and vote for you this November?
Well, there's still a lot at stake. There always will be a lot at stake for rural Alaska. You know, we're in an era where we still have budget shortfalls. We have a gap between how much the state is taking in and how much we're spending. And wholesale budget cuts impact smaller communities more greatly than they do larger communities. And so my experience, the last 2 years, I've had the privilege of being the first Speaker of the House with Alaska Native heritage, and I've gained a certain amount of seniority, certain amount of respect. I work with both Democrats and Republicans across the aisle to the best of my ability, because we as rural legislators are greatly outnumbered in Juneau. I was talking with Senator Hoffman about this yesterday, how small the contingent of rural legislators is on the Senate and how small it is in the House, and how we really have to use our experience, use our seniority to protect rural Alaska, but hopefully also to, bring any capital project money that might be out there, knowing that the budget itself is very thin these days. But so to me, it comes down to ultimately, protecting our small schools, for example, or protecting what little that we get in the criminal justice system and health care and things like that. So that's why I'm running again. And it's been a real privilege to represent Sandpoint and the rest of the borough for all the years that I have.
Yeah, you touched on so much of what I'd like to talk about today. We had Governor Walker on the air on Tuesday, and we asked him a lot of the similar questions I'd like to ask you, just because you and him were both in office over the last 4 years, and there's been so much has happened over that time period, and you touched on just the budget shortfall issues that we've seen. And, for the last 4 years, we went from being cash rich, as everyone knows, to being very cash poor with the drop in oil prices. For 3 years, we ran a deficit of about $3 billion. And now this last year, because of various measures that were taken in the legislature and through cutting the budget, we're down to about $700 million deficit. Now, to do that, there had to be a usage of permanent fund earnings and budget cuts. The PFD is on everyone's mind, so I can't really get around that. And I just wanted to talk to you about that and share your thoughts about what has happened with the permanent fund over the last 3 or 4 years. And since you played a role in it, what your feelings are about that.
Well, the good news is that we were able to increase the 2018 permanent fund from last year to $1,600 this year, so a $500 increase. That's the good news. I understand how important the permanent fund dividend is to people in rural Alaska. Quite frankly, we tried to get a full PFD last year. In the House, we had a vote on it in March. The vote turned out to be very close, believe it or not. 21 members, including myself, voted yes for a full permanent fund dividend. 19 members voted no. And on the 21 side, it was Republicans and Democrats. And on the 19 side, it was Republicans and Democrats. And it was a real mix of urban, rural, coastal, interior on both sides of the issue. And the prevailing concern is that while the permanent fund itself right now is doing very well, we've been told by the expert advisors who actually advise the fund managers that the next 10 years is going to bring a global slowdown, and that the earnings of the permanent fund are going to go backwards, if you will, or are going to be greatly reduced from what they are today. You know, and that coupled with the fact that we're now for the first time actually using the fund not just to pay dividends or for inflation-proofing the fund, but we're also using it to pay a big chunk of essential services around the state. And, you know, that's the day that Jay Hammond said that we were always going to get to. You know, we were going to take a non-renewable resource like oil and convert it into a renewable resource called a permanent fund. And I think by and large, we've been successful at it. You know, and I'm running against somebody who's basically essentially promising everybody a full permanent fund dividend, which, you know, it sounds great. I support a full permanent fund dividend. But if we couldn't get it last year in the legislature, you know, many of us rural legislators trying because there was real concern about the long-term outlook of the fund, he's not going to be able to do it. And so I'm working with everybody. I gave a presentation in Sandpoint a couple of years ago where I sort of laid the picture out as frankly as I possibly could and talking about all the sensitive issues, budget-wise, the permanent fund dividend, some of the things we are constrained by with a smaller capital budget. And I'm going to continue giving that message because I think constituents have sent me to Juneau to represent their greater interests in terms of community priorities, and that includes the permanent fund dividend, by the way. But they also expect me to be honest and truthful back in return, you know, communicating the true situation in terms of what's happening.
I remember the presentation that you gave here 2 years ago. It was in 2016 during the last election cycle. And, yeah, you made the rounds to talk about the fiscal situation. And during that presentation, you gave a case for using some of the budget or some of the permanent fund for budgetary needs and things along the lines of education, public safety. And now, last year was confusing for me. It was a very complex situation because, as you said, there was that vote to bring the full permanent fund. But there's also been a push, and you've been supportive, I believe, of this idea that we should use the permanent fund to help pay for expenses as well. Is there a reason that you decided to move for that full permanent fund dividend? And do you think it should be used for these expenses? Do you think that's a good use of the fund?
We have no other choice in terms of using earnings from the permanent fund. Our gap right now between, again, what we spend and what we bring in is too great. Otherwise, translation, we don't have a whole lot left in savings in Alaska. Just a short 4 or 5 years ago, we had upwards of $14 to $18 billion in savings accounts. This year, we're down to a projected, at the end of the fiscal year, down to a projected $1.8 billion, which, you know, by using earnings from the permanent fund, we've been able to reduce that large gap that we had to a smaller gap. Oil prices have risen, you know, teetering somewhere in the high 70s to even $80, $81 a barrel as of late. That's going to help. That's encouraging. But I caution everyone that because production, you know, the amount of oil that's coming down the pipeline is only a quarter of what it used to be. We've got a pipeline that's about a quarter full now. That oil is going to have to get really high in terms of us being able to balance the budget in any scenario. And I believe in virtually sort of any sort of picture going forward, we're still going to have to use earnings from the earnings reserve. You know, some might say, well, we should cut the budget $1 billion. We should, you know, maybe cut our way to a balanced budget. But that's virtually impossible to do when you look at, you know, almost half of the budget being tied to education and health and healthcare services and things that are critically important to everyone in Alaska. But, you know, as a rural legislator, we don't want schools to shut down our smaller communities. We don't want to lose what little bit of the money that flows in the communities for health clinics and public safety and revenue sharing and the power cost equalization. Ferry service is another critical one. I hope we talk about that a little bit more. So, yeah, it's a picture, Austin, that's complicated, a lot of moving parts, and very difficult to sort of explain to somebody over Facebook or even at a casual chat at the post office or on the street.
Yes, it is. And there's been discussion as well over other forms of creating or not creating revenue, but gathering revenue for the expenses, such as taxes and other forms of revenue creation. And I know that's been a big hot button issue that hasn't seemed to gone anywhere. Do you think there might be a future for an opportunity for a tax across Alaska or some other form of revenue other than the permanent fund, or do you think that pretty much has gone away for now? And then we can definitely move on to the ferry service. I think that's what you said there. I'd love to talk about that as well.
Well, the day is going to come when we're going to have to find some source of alternate revenue, new revenue, however you want to call it. You know, if oil prices come back up, we're looking at maybe some more production taking place up in the North Slope. That will help keep the production curve, which, again, you know, a pipeline about a quarter full, maybe keep that more towards the status quo. Maybe the fight for new revenues isn't going to happen next session, but I can almost assure anyone that at some point in the near future, we as Alaskans are going to have to look at that picture or decide that we're going to cut vital services to balance the budget.
Okay, that's interesting that you juxtapose it like that, either cut these services or find other forms of revenue. And, you know, hopefully there can be new exploration as well. Perhaps the LNG pipeline will be something that comes online and continue to create revenue through those means. Now, you mentioned the ferry system. Was that what you said you would like to talk about, Bryce?
Yeah, so the ferry system, and I've not been to Sandpoint yet. I'm hoping to get down sometime within the next 2 to 3 weeks. But I've been to King Cove and Unalaska and the Chignecks, and, I'm traveling quite regularly. Everywhere I go, at least in the lower part of the district, the ferry system is one of the top concerns. And Senator Hoffman and I have prioritized keeping the funding in the budget so the ferry does make it out, presumably twice a month. I know that's not always been the case. We've worked hard to get replacement money for the Tustamina into the budget, which, the whole design phase of the new ferry is underway right now and leading eventually to the construction of a new ferry. But the ferry system itself, the marine highway system, more accurately, needs to be restructured because it's costing too much, and I think most people agree with that. So there will be major legislation next year, as there was this past session, to essentially build a different model of overseeing the ferry system and sort of an independent quasi-state private sort of entity, very much like what the Alaska Railroad has or Alaska Gas Line Board has or other entities, where you have more of a, almost like a private sector running of the ferry system. Because, we all agree that the service that the ferry system provides is absolutely vital and needs to be kept in place. And that's something that Senator Hoffman and I are going to continue fighting for. I can't help but slipping in. At the very beginning, you asked me why I was running again. And, well, here's a perfect example. Because my seniority, my knowledge of the issue, my background and all of it with the communities, I think can play a vital role in the House in terms of pushing any changes to the ferry system and protecting the funding, pushing it forward in a way that's beneficial to our communities.
Everyone here loves the ferry system, so you're not going to see anyone that doesn't like it, and there is obviously concern about the Tustamina. So do you feel that has money been secured for a new ferry until we are in the design phase? Is there money set aside for the actual construction, or is that something that's going to have to come later?
Yeah, so there's about $244 million, $222 of it's federal funding. I'm going off of memory here. And 20-plus is state funds that have been appropriated, not allocated, that have been actually put aside for the construction of a new ferry. We all know that we live in a world of cost overruns and of changes and things of that nature. So I guess I wouldn't be shocked if we had to go back to the legislature to get extra funds. And I haven't, Shirley Marquardt, the former mayor of Unalaska, is now the director of the Marine Highway Division, and I haven't talked with her as of late about the design phase, but I intend to. So yeah, the money's there, and we hope to be building it here in a matter of a few years once the design is completed.
Well, we look forward to hearing more about that. And then next year, we'll have to get you on to talk about whatever restructuring happens, because when you start, you know, talking about moving something to quasi-government, quasi-private, obviously that can cause a big shakeup that will carry pros and cons. So we'll be very interested to hear more about that if you're in Juneau this next year and that legislation does get pushed through.
Absolutely. And just to put it in a little bit more context, the Marine Highway System is, you know, in terms of the state dollars that are in the Department of Transportation, I think it takes up at least 40, maybe 45% of the overall state funds in the Department of Transportation. So it's a huge chunk. And, you know, I think pretty broad consensus that that's not sustainable going forward.
Yeah, that's tremendous. Okay. It'll be interesting to see what happens with that. I wanted to touch on two other matters. I know when you're on the trail, time is a crunch, so I appreciate you giving us the time that you have. But I'd love to talk to you about two things in particular and then let you share about anything else. I'd love to talk about education if possible, but crime and fishing are two things that are on everyone's mind as well. You know, the perception out there is that crime is on the increase, and it seems to be statistically true that crime right now is rising throughout Alaska, and there was an effort that came through to kind of reform the justice system known as Senate Bill 91, and that was perceived as not a success because of the kind of a catch-and-release program that came around with Class C felonies and then the rise in auto theft and things of that nature. Has there been anything that's been going on to address what the public perception is of these issues? And do you see this as a problem yourself?
So I had a great conversation with Chief Goulden, King Cove, you know, about a week ago on this topic. And we spoke to an officer of his, and really I had my staff in town, and she's worked on the issue of criminal justice reform for a long time. We had a real frank back and forth, and I learned, as I always do, I learned more looking through the eyes of somebody in a place like King Cove, and certainly would hope to have that opportunity when I get to Sand Point. But, you know, Senate Bill 91 was passed in the legislature in 2016. It was a big, sprawling bill, 143 pages, I think it was. And tucked into that bill, which arguably should have been about four bills, maybe more, was a component that addressed issues in the criminal code. That's the part of the bill that, you know, has really received the most attention. There was also a lot of components of the bill that addressed, you know, substance abuse, community support, pretrial, post-trial elements of sort of the incarceration cycle, if you will. And so the bill itself, it's big, it's complicated. I think looking back, most of us in the legislature would have broken it up into smaller pieces and would have done it in a different sequence. I think time has proven that to be correct. And so I understand people's concerns about Senate Bill 91 as a whole, but the legislature last fall went in and actually took a lot of those criminal code changes and we strengthened them, you know, just based on the short amount of time that Senate Bill 91 had been in effect. Less than a year, or about a year. So we've already taken steps to address some of the, you know, the penalties and the offenses, misdemeanors, felonies. I'm not going to be shocked, and I will certainly be promoting if we need to go back in and revisit some of the existing sentencing requirements in Senate Bill 91 or even outside of the bill and look to strengthen those, because I'm a firm believer if you do the crime, you do the time. But I also recognize that a lot of criminal activity is driven by the opioid problem that we have, the alcohol issues that are prevalent in all of our communities, and things of that nature. So keeping a, you know, sort of a broader eye on all of the changes I think that need to happen in order to bring crime down. We also need to be cognizant that we need more treatment facilities. We need more opportunities for intervention. And really to sort of tackle the problem in a more holistic way than just sort of taking the law and order approach that some would advocate. Because really, you know, talk to anybody, you know, crime happens because you got bad guys out there. They should be put to jail. And I'm all behind that. But then you've got somebody who's a young kid who does something, you know, inadvisable, something stupid, and they go in as a misdemeanor, and then they get in the system. And because they don't have any treatment or any support when they get out, you know, they sort of launch a path towards being a career criminal and eventually, you know, get put behind bars for a long period of time. So it's a complicated subject. I certainly welcome people to call, and I want to hear more. And thank you for asking the question.
Yeah, the opioid epidemic is obviously a big part for the Bush communities, for every part of the community. It's not a Bush thing. It's not an urban thing, a black or a white or a native. It's an everybody issue right now. And there's been some money coming through the federal pipeline to address that. Alaska got a pretty good chunk of that change to put towards opioid use. What do you see as your goal for using those funds to help the Bush communities? What do you think would be the best use of that money?
Well, first off, to get some of it out to the Bush. That's my number one goal. And, you know, the Department of Health and Social Services has really done a lot of things to try to combat the use, the abuse of opioids. And we in the legislature, we passed a number of bills, including strengthening the prescription drug database requirements, requiring medical providers and pharmacists to sort of check the box every time somebody gets issued any opioids. We've also passed legislation making it easier for naloxone, the intervention drug, to be used in the event that somebody's overdosing. And, you know, we worked with Governor Walker to actually, the legislature did, but Governor Walker created a new division within Health and Social Services that would have a command incident structure, the Division of Substance Misabuse and Treatment. I think I am close on the title. And so there's been a lot of efforts statewide to do education and to actually reduce the amount of opioid drugs that are being prescribed. I think statistics show that there are less now sort of being prescribed than there might have been even just a short year or two ago. But yet the problem persists. And I think many would tell you that it's getting worse as opposed to better. So we need to continue focusing on the issue as a priority issue. And again, like the criminal justice system or like the very difficult issue of suicide, you know, it's not one factor that causes things to happen, or there's not sort of one sort of solution out there that's going to cure it all. It's multifaceted, and it involves community involvement, sort of regional organizations, and really, you know, the state to keep a lot of these programs up and running and funded at the level that, you know, at the best level that we can.
It is a multifaceted issue. I don't envy anyone who is trying to address it right now, and it has to come from all levels, you know, from the top down to the bottom, or even probably more so from the bottom up to address these kinds of problems. So appreciate everything that,
yes,
that the state,
yes,
governor is trying to do.
And Sandpoint has been a real leader in that. There's some individuals locally there who have really taken strong action, and they're to be commended for that. And and you know, I think that's, like you said, that's a big part of it.
So just the final two things, and these are ginormous, but you, more than anyone, understand the politics of fish, probably, with your district involving Bristol Bay, the Aleutians East Borough, and Alaska Peninsula fisheries, and also Chignik. And so you've been hearing probably quite a bit about this last summer's salmon season. We've seen every area of government cut by probably about 30%, whether it's criminal justice, public broadcasting, fishing game, or education. They've all taken pretty massive cuts. And the fishing game has just been one that's, I think, in the Aleutians East Borough has been on everyone's eye, because when we need them the most, they're not there because of the cut or the funding issues. So we had this last year with Chignik. We've had our season was very poor as well. And there's not a lot of resources available to study about what's happening or to, you know, help with the investigation to see what can be done. You're hearing from everybody about this, and you've got to walk the line. But what do you see as your job in helping the fisheries and helping these areas so everyone can get the opportunities that they need?
Well, first I would say that the Board of Fish was constitutionally created. And it was put into our Constitution because our founding fathers thought that the issue of fisheries policy and allocation should be separate from the politics that are present in the legislative process. And that's something that I've always honored. And so, you know, I've always respected the fact that the Board of Fish is a separate deliberative body, and its proceedings, you know, have been outside my realm of influence, and I've respected that. And I think many in the borough, you know, appreciate that, certainly, and have, you know, have recognized that I've honored that. In terms of the Department of Fish and Game, budget cuts, you know, are taking its toll there, as well as, you know, the other 13 or so state agencies that have all had to scale back. Senator Hoffman, in particular, has led the charge to get more money in the Commercial Fisheries Division, something I've supported in the House. And, you know, I could probably tell you that the limitations, at least from what I hear anyway, are there in Kodiak, they're there in Petersburg, or they're there in Sitka in terms of what the department can or cannot do. And, you know, I think it's really important, particularly, you know, the year that the peninsula has had, that the Chignecks have had, that a lot of other areas around the state, that, that you know, in terms of getting the state back on its feet again, we cannot lose focus on the Department of Fish and Game and the resources that that we need. And, you know, we've been fortunate to have Sam Cotton as commissioner the last 4 years. Sam has fished out of Sandpoint. He's worked with the borough as a fisheries advisor for a number of years. He's got very intimate knowledge of the fisheries down there and the needs. And I know he's done the very best that he could in terms of allocating resources that we give him from the legislature. And so, again, this is something that we take year by year. And I invite, and I'm sure I'm going to hear an earful when I get into Sandpoint, just as I did when I was in King Cove. But I welcome it, and I'm looking for input and, you know, more of a sense of what we can do to help, you know, the department have a better presence in the area.
Yeah, not an easy one. I don't envy anyone involved in this. So thank you for your thoughts on that. And again, this is Representative Bryce Edgman. He is the representative for our area. So if you have thoughts, please give him a call or talk to, hopefully you can make it down here. But this is a great opportunity for you to have your voice heard with our legislature. Representative Edgman, we want to give you one final chance to just share anything that's on your mind before we take off, but we thank you for your time. Are there any final words that you'd like to share for the people here in the Aleutians East?
Well, I look forward to seeing everyone when I come down. You know, I've got a lot of longtime friends that I have in Sandpoint, people who are near and dear to me and people I've known for a long period of time. You know, I think I'd also point out, Austin, that we just touched a little bit on education funding.
Yeah.
But the legislature last year, in particular, you know, at the behest of the coalition that I led in the House, we held the line on education funding. There were no reductions. And, in fact, we actually increased education funding for the current year by $20 million. Not a great amount when you look at 54 school districts across the state. But it gave, you know, the managers, the superintendents, school boards, at least some certainty in what the funding was going to be for this year. And then next year, sort of in a kind of an unorthodox move, this past session, the House said, look, Senate, if you want to adjourn and get your priorities through, we also want more for education. So the next fiscal year, and this would be, you know, the fall of 2019 going into the calendar year 2020, we were able to add in $30 million extra dollars for funding for schools, and then hopefully take the whole issue of pink slips off the table for a second year, which is something that has been a real you know, problem for those that put school budgets together and try to retain teachers and other workforce needs, not knowing what their funding is going to be from the state. So education funding is critical. It's at the top of my list. And I'd like to, I guess, close by saying, you know, back to the permanent fund dividend. It is going to be $500 larger than last year. We did try to get a full PFD. I'm sure there will be attempts next year. We'll see how things go. I'm a strong supporter of the permanent fund dividend, but I'm also a strong supporter of education and public safety and everything else in the budget. And it's really, for me as a legislator and somebody who's been in a leadership position, quite frankly, it's been a balancing act. And I just want people to understand that we're doing the very best we can, and nobody is, you know, slashing the permanent fund dividend just because they want to be, I don't even know what the word would be, just doing it to do it. That just, it's absolutely crazy to me. I think I'll leave it at that and really appreciate the time on the radio and would urge, folks to reach out to me, and I'm available at any time that I get a call or an email.
Excellent. Yeah, and hopefully we can have you on again before November in the election to talk a little bit more, because I would like to talk more about education, but there's only so much time that everyone has. But thank you so much, Representative Edgman, for coming on the air. And again, hopefully we can have you on one more time before the election if the stars align, and maybe perhaps if you can make it out here. So thank you again for your time.
Absolutely, Austin. Just let me know, and I will be available. And again, I appreciate your time, and hello to everyone at Sandpoint. Hope people have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too. And have a great day. We'll talk to you soon.